From the 1967 music scene, music from artists like Janis Joplin, the Jefferson Airplane, the Beatles, and many others will be featured. Join me for 2 hours to tune in, turn on, and drop out. That's Monday, August 7th, 2 to 4 p.m. If you're going to San Francisco,
good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland at 11:30 is Art Focus. Art Focus speaks to Julian Dolan about the show representing vernacular photographs of, by, and for African Americans. But coming up next is Stage and Studio. James Dixon welcomes the directors of the Egg Summer Theater Academy for Portland Area High School Artists. Stage and Studio is made possible by KBOO members and support from PD Expendables, stage and studio supplies. PD Expendables sells and rents to film and theater production, from gel and globes to paint and lights, featuring the latest Arri LED lighting. They can be reached at 503-887-5880 or pdexpendables.com.
Welcome to Stage and Studio. I'm James Dixon. On today's show, our special guest, John Sajak, Executive Director, and Anna Dunn Wilder, Program Director for Isinglass. Isinglass is a Portland nonprofit organization founded in 2012 to, quote, develop, pilot, and implement programs that promote a healthy arts industry, community, and education system. We will be discussing their seven-week summer program titled Egg, which is hosted at Artist Repertory Theater. Join us for Stage and Studio. I'm James Dixon. Joining me in the KBOO studio today, we have special guests John Sajak, Executive Director, and Anna Dunn Wilder, Program Director for Isinglass. That was a mouthful. John and Anna, welcome to Stage and Studio. Oh,
thanks so much for having us, John.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So for those that are unfamiliar, could you tell us more about your organization and mission statement?
Sure. Isinglass was founded to innovate arts advocacy methods and to find new ways of supporting a sustainable arts ecosystem. What we're really trying to look at is what do we do as arts advocates that's successful and that really gets impact and results, not just on the ground level, but from a systemic level. Mm-hmm. And how can we improve on them and how can we innovate on those techniques? And so all of our programs are really geared towards serving artists, communities, arts organizations. And it's kind of just trying to approach it from the other side, you know, like, mm-hmm. instead of focusing on something like advertising or marketing, although we do talk mm-hmm. about that, we're trying to look for ways to affect the culture and the actual systems that support mm-hmm. the theater community here in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long have you been up and running?
Just about 5 years.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So give us an idea of what happens when the kids come into your summer camp? What can they expect?
Well, so the summer camp that you're talking about is Egg. So Egg is a leadership academy that is, we invite students who are between the ages of 14 and 18 to come and learn about the art and business of theater. And a really interesting element of it is that we're not just teaching them, you know, holistic kind of arts education in theater, like directing, stage management, designing, all of those aspects of theater. We're also teaching them marketing and budgeting and troubleshooting and staffing. We're teaching them a lot of the things that artists don't even get taught in college. Mm-hmm. And so what we're trying to do is prepare them to go back to their school and use all of these skills to either found a program. So if they come from a school that doesn't have a program, and there are many of them in the region, or to also improve and enrich their existing program with the knowledge that we've given them. So it's essentially we're turning these teenagers into arts advocates so they can come and protect their programs or found new ones in their schools. Mm-hmm. And you know, when a kid is actually, basically our process is that in January, we go around to all the schools, the ones we can get into,
right.
And we talk to all the kids and we talk to the teachers and we tell them about the program. And, you know, we don't mince words. This is a very, very difficult program. It's a 7 weeks. It's 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. We go and see a huge number of shows. I think, mm-hmm. How many did we see this?
We've summer? Seen like 1 to 2 every single week. So
yeah. So yeah. The kids go to 1 to 2 professional shows every single week. They learn all day. And so we're very honest about it. We talk to the kids about it. And then we have an application process where they actually will fill out an online application and then everyone gets interviewed. And then we accept between 10 and 12 students every year. And so what the kids can expect when they come into the program is to really be challenged. We don't treat these kids like they're, you know, kids, basically.
No,
we treat them
not.
Like they are people who will go back to their school mm-hmm. and truly lead a movement to protect mm-hmm. the performing arts mm-hmm. in their community.
That's amazing.
Right.
So, Anna, you're the program director, the mm-hmm. new program director.
Yes, today.
Yeah,
actually.
Today,
yes.
Actually. Yeah. Yeah.
So, tell me about this new position of yours. Yeah. When I actually participated with Isinglass this year as one of their artists, and you're one of the first people that I saw. I actually couldn't afford to pay for my parking. My card wasn't working. And she's like, I'll
you're
take care
so
of it.
So sweet.
Like,
oh you're so God. Sweet. That was great. Yeah.
We try and take care of our artists.
Right.
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. That was sort of my role that week was to really make sure that the actors were well fed and well taken care of.
Well, I was thankful. I ordered a new card and it was in the mail and
yeah.
I couldn't pay for my parking. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
Moving back on topic. So, so give us an idea of what type of plays the students featured. Some of the plays that they had were really interesting plays.
Mm-hmm.
Did they pick those or do you give them a pool of plays to pick from? Or
right. So what you're talking about is our program that happens in the center of the egg. It's called Fail Week. And in that program, the students are given scripts that we've picked, and they, with a team of other students, they produce, direct, and design a different play each day. So actually, at the end of the entire week, they've actually produced 12 pieces. So it's sort of like an amazing boot camp for theater making. And it's really fun, and we've been so lucky to have such wonderful actors like yourself come and
you.
Be involved
I think I said it a million
in that.
Times, but we really appreciate it.
Yeah. So what's really awesome about that is that they're doing the same 3 scripts all 4 days. So that actually allows them to stretch their imagination in the way that they can use the text and just sort of put their own spin on it. And we had some really, really unique pieces this year, and it was so fun.
I was thoroughly impressed. To be honest, I'd taken a week-long retreat, camping trip, and the very next day of returning was when I jumped into this. I'm like, okay,
awesome.
So I was well-meditated, well-relaxed. I'm like, I'm ready to do this. Let's do it. And it was interesting. I felt like I was inserted into this... it's like this thing that was happening, like, here, we need an artist, you're an artist, this is what we're doing, so I'll take care of your costumes, okay, here's your director, and I was like, they were very, they utilized me, they utilized my time well.
That's great.
And I was really impressed because I loved the table work portion, where we actually talk about the work, and like, I actually had some questions. I'm like, you're the director, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
And you know, my director was professional and had a great answer for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked through a lot of stuff. I was really impressed with what I saw that day.
The way this the program is structured is the first 3 weeks are essentially a boot camp for theater skills. And so we have 5 faculty members, and they teach them stage management, directing. They teach them some acting techniques.
Mm-hmm.
They teach them history of theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so these faculty members really just give them a boot camp on theater skills. And that's really to reset everybody, to give them the basis of the craft. Mm-hmm. Of theater, which, you know, I think sometimes in it can get lost in a secondary education on theater.
Right.
I think, you know, because we cover tech stuff too, you know, we cover design and lighting and all that other stuff.
So many other programs only focus on acting, which in terms of the sustainability of this like art form is really such a small part of the puzzle. So,
well, what sets you apart from other arts organizations mm-hmm. that do similar work like this? Are there other organizations doing similar with similar programs like Eyes and Glass at all?
Well, I think that there are a lot of great programs in the city, and just because we've decided to create this very holistic and incredibly rigorous program doesn't mean other theater programs aren't incredibly valuable.
Absolutely.
I think one of the things that really distinguishes this program is our emphasis on a holistic education. I think part of it is that we don't cut corners or mince words. Like, these kids are challenged from the very beginning.
Yes.
And we are not interested in softening the education at all. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's why we have a very strong vetting process during the application process. And, you know, the thing to me that really inspires me about the program is not just the theater education. It's also the fact that over the course of the entire summer, we teach them how to be advocates. So we actually work with them to do research on a problem facing their school so that they have actual statistics and data. And so they get qualitative and quantitative research about the problem facing their school, which they identify themselves. Mm-hmm. And then we work with them to kind of translate and interpret that data into a solution. And a solution that's based on their perception of their culture, working with their teacher to try and come up with something that their teacher feels like is going to fit really well into their school's culture. And we've had dozens of kids go back to their school. I think I calculated the other day, it was 85% of our students complete an advocacy project.
Right, right.
When they go back to their high school. And these are just crazy, man. Like, these kids do makes me feel so lazy. With. And I founded this organization. So, like,
amazing.
We had a kid go back. Actually, two of our students went back, and they created this program at Wilson High School mm-hmm. Called "Shut Up, You Can't Tell Me What to Do. You're Not My Real Dad." And it's what we call a micro play festival. So a micro play festival is where you, instead of having, you know, like a one act festival, which would be like 20 minute plays or something that you do three or four of them, they do 30-second to 2-minute plays. So they do 30 of them. Mm-hmm. And what's great about it is this is the perfect formula for engaging high school playwrights. Because what they can do is create a beautiful little piece of 2 minutes, which can convey a great deal of meaning. And they don't have to worry about, you know, all those things you learned as a playwright in college with, like, all the structure and figuring all that stuff out.
Right.
Instead, they can just create these beautiful little pieces of theater that convey something about their experience and give them a voice. And these two students went back to Wilson, and they basically created this show, this micro play festival, and they engaged. The first year, they had 18 student playwrights write pieces, and they presented, I think it was over 30 of the pieces. And the entire show was written, produced, fundraised for, directed, designed, stage managed, and planned by students.
Wow.
And so they put it on for a full weekend, and, you know, it continues to this day. Mm-hmm. That was actually 2 years ago, and they still have this festival, even though those students have graduated.
That's amazing.
It's an example of how, when you teach kids what they can accomplish, if they have the tools,
right,
a lot of them have the passion.
Right.
And I think a really underutilized asset that our schools have, you know, because a thing we say at Eyes and Glass a lot is money is not the only resource.
It's not.
And I think we lose track of that.
Right.
And so one of the things that we're really trying to do is there's this completely untapped resource of advocates and passionate artists that exist in all of our high schools. And we should really, I mean, we want to do this. We want to get an ed graduate into every school in Portland, and then we want to expand. We want to create an army of teenage advocates that can literally tell the adults what's what.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of times the adults fail us. Yeah. In protecting our arts programs. And
they do.
That's just a pattern. You know, at a certain point, you're insane if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect different results. And so I think we need to start putting our trust in the passionate people that are going to fight on the ground for these programs. And those are the kids.
Yeah. And I think part of the major focus of the program is telling the students that their voices are valuable and useful, and that so often when you're under 18 or even under 30, there is not a space made for you to say that, like, actually what you're presenting and what you're creating and what you think is valuable and useful and actually really, really matters and is absolutely part of change making.
Yeah.
I mean,
So once again, for those that are just now joining us, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm James Dixon, and joining us today are special guests John Zajac, Executive Director, and Anna Dunwilder, Program Director for Isinglass. I swear I'm going to get that right before the end of the show. So tell us about your relationship with Artist Repertory Theater with the Egg program that you have.
Great. Do you want to, I mean, I have come on more recently in that partnership. So I haven't been part of setting it up, but it's been really, really amazing. Artist Repertory Theater has been incredible in allowing us to have space, and we've used costumes and props, and we have now rehearsed in almost every space possible in that theater. I mean, there were people rehearsing in the lobby, and so they've been incredibly gracious and generous with that space and with time and resources, and it's been really a wonderful partnership.
Yeah, so this is the fourth year of the program, and the first 3 years, you know, we kind of shuttled around to smaller theaters that we rented ourselves. You know, and one of the things I have to tell you, I respect, I've lived in Portland for about 5 years. And, you know, I've been to a lot, most of the theater companies here, I've seen shows and engaged with them and talked to them. And Artist Repertory Theater for me is the one that most closely reflects the ethos that I think that artists are going to have to adopt in order to have a healthy and strong theater industry. And it's this ethos that recognizes the art is incredibly important, but the community is equally important. And a sharing of resources is necessary. We can't circle our wagons, you know what I mean, like anymore.
It's so great to hear you say that. I was having a similar conversation the other day. We always put these shows on and we look for donors to sponsor shows. And I mean, we've had, what, at least three theater companies lose their space in the past couple of months.
Yeah, that's right.
And now, with myself personally being with Theater Vertigo, we're talking about our space. It's like, well, what can we do? And it's just like, I personally am more focused on providing spaces.
Yes.
It's not like, and if we're not using the space, let's get other arts people into the space and put more energy into the space, because if we keep losing spaces, the art dies.
Well, this is what's crazy. You know, Damaso and Sarah, Damaso's the artistic director over there and Sarah is the managing director. They recognized the value of Isinglass really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so we were a resident artist. They invited us to be a part of their resident companies group, which is, they call it Arts Hub, and it's where a whole bunch of arts organizations, they allow them to have space. For a very inexpensive price. And so what it does is it gives them this administrative space. It gives them this place where they can have a center to do their business out of.
And gain some legitimacy.
Yeah, and gain some, they put their credibility behind those organizations. Yeah. And, you know, we wouldn't be anywhere where we are unless, you know, Damaso and Sarah hadn't, and the rest of the people at Arts Rep hadn't recognized the value of an arts advocacy innovation organization. And but yeah, so it's really important to me to talk about and call out organizations that really do have an incredible civic, a sense of civic duty to the artists as well as the community.
That brings up another question. I came across a blog the other day detailing your perspective on three easy ways to get kids butts and seats. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is part of what we do. If you're ever in the Isinglass offices when we're brainstorming, it can be quite an incredible experience, because we just kind of,
it's a fiery place.
Yeah, one of our principles is this idea of radical ambition. So we just want to make sure that we're not cutting out good ideas just because someone, you know, we think maybe it won't be doable. That's a great way to chop off really great opportunities. And so these three techniques actually came out of one of those brainstorms. And, you know, one of them is this idea that we should be, and this is my personal belief, we should be giving any high school student, in fact, any student in a metro area, the theaters in that metro area should give them tickets for free at any time. And they should simply have to show up with a student ID, and they can get a ticket to any show at any time for free. And the reason for that is because, you know, we're having difficulty enough getting kids to come to theater because it's not a thing for them anymore. Like we have difficulty culturally, right, getting people to go to theater. And so to add into that layers of, you know, money and logistics, you have to show up a half hour before the show and then you get, you know, 70% off the ticket. And then that's only if a bunch of other people don't show up and pay full price and then you don't get the ticket. And it's one of those things. And there are some companies that are doing this really well. But I think that as a city, we should get behind it. I think it should be that the arts organizations and theater organizations say to all of the teenagers, to all of the students of our school systems, come, just come.
Just
it's
be,
free. Just
yeah.
have fun.
Just be here and experience theater and be bitten right. by yeah. the bug now. So yeah.
And people aren't going to lose. I don't think that theaters are going to really lose any money.
No. Because I don't think so either.
Because a seat expires the moment the show starts.
Yeah. It does. It really does.
It's like, it's worth
we got to sell tickets. And it's, I mean, as an actor, there's nothing worse than seeing 20 empty seats yeah. and like hearing how people couldn't get in or like yes. or like wondering why there's no students in these seats or right. for me saying not seeing more people of color in the seats or
right.
like
exactly
know, like what's exactly. you know it's heartbreaking it
well,
really is
and that art is not accessible and
right.
and that mm-hmm. is really huge and yeah. that when there are those empty seats, how much better would it be to have folks that had accessibility barriers be there for free.
Yeah.
Like with no strings attached, no hoops that they had to jump through, just allowed to come and share in the art.
Exactly. Just mm-hmm. to have access to be able to experience yes. it, because that's something a lot of kids don't have even at yes. school anymore.
Well, how can community members get involved with Eyes and Glass?
You know, what we really need right now is to get into as many schools as humanly possible. And I think that, you know, this is one of those situations where our educators are under assault constantly. They are not paid a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They spend their own money on their materials.
Yes, they do.
I mean, there's something really crazy about it. It actually really angers me, so I'm going to have to try and keep my dander down. But it's one of those things where... they're so busy that sometimes even when you can offer them something, they're so engaged for like 18 hours a day that they can't.
Mm-hmm.
They can't even have the time to engage in it. And so right. if there are community members out there who think that their high school could really benefit from this, help us get into those schools. Help us talk to them. Because in every school, there are two or three egg kids. Mm-hmm. Kids that are ready to be advocates, to support their program, to pressure their administration, I mean, to support arts education. It doesn't make any sense. This is what frustrates me the most sometimes in my advocacy work, is that the data indicates that if we want higher grades in math and science, we should have high arts.
Yes.
The data indicates that if we want to massively increase graduation rates, we need to fund the arts. There is strong correlations by studies done by the Department of Education and by the National Endowment for the Arts that indicate that especially in low-income schools, if you want to decrease dropout rates, the key way to do it is to have a very strong arts program.
It's great to hear you say that. We're losing funding across the board. Like,
yes,
federally, yep. statewide.
Oh, my God. Literally, just the other day, I was complaining to Anna because yeah. you hear these stories from these kids about the state of their programs mm-hmm. over four right. years. And I have been noticing the kids have more and more responsibility. And the programs are being less and less funded, less and less supported. It's funny when you talk to a theater teacher, though, and this is a common misconception, they don't even perceive funding, because it's a part of their everyday life, as the biggest problem. Obviously, it's a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
What they perceive, and I thought this was remarkable, we got all the theater teachers together to have a little powwow about what their actual problems are, because we try and base our programs on actual stuff. And their biggest problem is systemic. Their biggest problem is the structure of the curriculum, which actually puts theater and the arts behind a huge number of other curricular priorities.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which means the kids never even get told half the time that there's a theater class.
Right. Right. In terms of registering for their classes.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, because I've been to schools where kids didn't even know they had a theater
Absolutely.
Program at their school.
Right.
And it's like, oh, there's like, who are these kids doing
yeah.
art? And
I'm
like,
this is what we're talking with many of our students, actually, in their advocacy projects this year, are actually trying to tackle that exact problem. We have a student right now from Fort Vancouver, and her campaign is basically, we exist. Like, we are theater kids here in Fort Vancouver High School, and we would like you to know that we exist.
And there are opportunities here, you
yeah,
know?
And that wow. she's really excited about inviting new students into that program. And
so what do you guys offer, any scholarships, or how accessible is this program for students?
Very accessible.
So we, you know, here's the thing. We are a service-based organization. We're here to make change. You can't make change if all you're focused on is money.
Right.
And so we do everything we can to remind ourselves that the most important thing is that we get kids from all over the city and the region who really need it, who need to be in this program, and their community needs them to come back to it. And what that means is that while the program, you know, we have a cost to the program, if you get in, we guarantee that you can attend. And it, it doesn't matter. We do we have a system that we do. It's a income based sliding scale. But I don't think we've I don't think we've ever had somebody who couldn't attend the program because of money, because we work with them.
We also accept students needs blind. So we accept them before we know anything about financial situation.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's one of those things. It's just I find it very distasteful to charge communities that don't have any money for the support that they need to bring arts into their community. And I also find it really distasteful to make a profit off of an educational program, especially with the situation that our industry is in, which is dire. And so we need to actually have our eye on the prize. And the prize is not inflating our budget by having expensive education programs.
So we've got a couple minutes left. So your students are currently in what we call fail week, and tomorrow they have
they finished fail week. So that's actually great. So fail week is the middle of the program, and the last 3 weeks of the program, the students actually have been devising a play, a piece of theater with Jacob Coleman from Portland Experimental Theater Ensemble.
Wow.
And it's remarkable. So they started with a piece of source material and they have just like been creating content and developing the show. And it's amazing. So it'll be tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. at Artist Repertory Theater, and it's free. And it's really, it's amazing. We would love to see as many people there as possible to support these amazing students.
I was really impressed by, not that I was surprisingly impressed, but I was just, I was really impressed. I remember I performed in one of the plays, and once I was done, I was like, that was awesome. And what was really awesome was when I turned around, you saw the piece, I walk out of the scene, and two students follow me out, and I looked at her, and I was like, well, how'd that go for you? And she's like, this is amazing. And she directed the show. She's like, this is amazing. And it actually made me feel really good because I wanted to give the director, this young director, what she needed. And it was just, it was, I love the ownership. That's what it is. The ownership that they have of it. It's that they created it. They put their hands into it. It was just amazing.
It's remarkable what students can do when you tell them they can. They have the permission to be them whole, their whole selves. And
I've always said that actually, like, the best part of this program isn't even the theater, and it isn't even in the advocacy. It's actually that the kids that leave to a person have an extraordinary amount of confidence that they didn't have when they went into it. And part of that is just showing them that this, there isn't a mystery to this. It's just having the tools and being given them and then told to go off and experiment and not being afraid of taking risks and failing. And if all of our kids leave the program just understanding that, then I think we've accomplished just an extraordinary amount.
Absolutely.
All right. So you are listening to Stage and Studio. I'm James Dixon, and joining us today are special guests, John Zajac, Executive Director, and Anna Dunwilder, Program Director for Isinglass. For more information about Isinglass, visit their website at www.isinglass.org. John and Anna, a tremendous thanks to you for joining us today. Please visit the students. Please wish the students a happy closing from us. It'll be amazing, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely.
If you missed any of this interview, you can listen online later today at kboo.fm/stageandstudio. You can also get post events or get previews by joining our Facebook page. And that's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to our engineer, Judy Feistel. Till next week, I'm James Dixon with Stage and Studio. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Coonerin's Electric Fin Band, Thursday, August 10th at 8 p.m. at the White Owl Social Club in Portland. Coonerin's Electric Fin Band and 1939 Ensemble perform Thai Psychedelia and are part of the Pickathon-sponsored White Owl Social Club's Outdoor Summer Concert Series. Again, that's the Coonerin's Electric Fin Band and 1939 Ensemble on Thursday, August 10th at 8 p.m. at White Owl Social Club, 1305 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Julia Dolan. She is the Minor White Curator of Photography at the Portland Art Museum. And she's here talking about representing vernacular portraits of, by, and for African Americans. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Julia.
Thank you.
So this is a new show, and it's something I've never seen in a museum before. It's vernacular photographs. It's photo album photos, as I think of them. It's prints that you would normally see in a person's album. It goes back to studio photography, and it goes all the way forward to Polaroids. And it's very kind of gritty. There's no, you know, there's no high artistry in many of these pictures. So just tell us what, where this all came from.
This exhibition came about almost exactly 2 years ago. A friend of mine named Larry Clark, who happens to be a vintage and antiques dealer here in Portland, started posting these incredible 19th and early 20th century photographs on his Instagram account. I follow him on Instagram, and I saw...
What's his name?
Larry Clark.
And on Instagram? Larry Clark?
Primitive Modern.
Okay.
Primitive Modern. And he posts so many wonderful things, and he has a real interest in photography as well. And he showed a number of photographs of African Americans. It's one thing to see a 19th century photograph. They're very common. There are probably hundreds of millions of them, perhaps still. But to see a number of them in a row of African Americans, that is a subject matter that we don't see quite as often. And so I actually contacted him through Instagram and said, when are you going to let me see these photographs? And I went over when my schedule finally permitted, and he showed me this album